from the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Skills Hudson, as the problem child.
Good evening. Welcome. Well, good evening, good morning, whatever it is. Good. Welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse, a show that takes place at that witching hour between what was today and yesterday into tomorrow. So tonight we are going to have a wonderful show. I just know it. I can feel it in my bones. I've consulted the spirit guides and asked them for their grace. And they have given me a guest, a homeboy, who's not just a nationally known comedian. He is also a comediapreneur. He's a producer, and I have to mention that because he gives me work. And so I ain't stupid. Damon Williams is here. We're going to have a nice, lot of fun conversation in just a bit. But first, as we usually do, we're going to talk about what kind of adult libations we're about to consume. You can have whatever you like, but for me, this is my cannabis and cognac segment. And so tonight we're going to use this little cute little vape mod. It has a, I don't know what this is. I don't really care. I just collect them, you know, and keep them in a little container and then pull them out and surprise myself what they might be. So we're going to be surprised together. In addition, we're going back to this little cocktail. I'm calling this an upper ghetto. This is an upper ghetto drink, and it's a lot of ice and some chocolate liqueur and Kahlua with some coffee. And to top it off and make it really upper ghetto, we're going to have a little Martell VSOP to kind of top it off and make it our weekly consumption of cognac. Like I said, feel free to, you know, have a bag of potato chips or some chocolate milk or whatever it is that makes you feel better in your late night snack chill mode. Because this is, no matter what we talk about, it's all about just relaxing and chilling. It's kind of like sitting at your auntie's knee. You know, the one that they don't let come over too much because she smokes and drinks and is a bad influence on the kids, which is why you love her. That's me. And this vape mod is cool because it heats up and it lets you know, it counts down to 10 seconds until it is at the perfect temperature for you to take a hit and get blitzoed. So watch how I deteriorate throughout the show. Or maybe I won't. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Got that done. And now I'm going to have a sip of my upper ghetto. It's really good. And it's really not as much as it looks like. I call it an upper ghetto because it's like, you know, $40 in the bar because you can get away with that. That's dangerous. That'll get you. You have to watch that drink. Anyway, so, but right now I want to talk about, I have a segment. This is the Marshaverse. This is where all my ideas, all my perspectives, all my comedy, where I live, the place where I find refuge from the madness that is the world we're raised in. And I find that as a Black person, that's what we've been doing forever. And I came to that realization when I started thinking about the Chitlin Circuit and how Black people created their own alternate show business to facilitate their own expression, their own artistic expression. And we limit it to like that period between 1930 and 1965 or something where the Chitlin Circuit was given its name. But it seems to me that throughout American history, Black people had to find their own means of everything, an alternate America. And so from like the Underground Railroad to hip hop, there's this same tradition of laying your own foundation, finding your own expression, and in so doing, adding to the culture in ways that get mentioned but don't really get the weight of the credit they deserve. These alternate forms of expression existed from minstrelsy, where Black people started doing their own minstrel shows since they couldn't get expression in the mainstream, which pretty much equals white artistic venues. So they found ways to express themselves even then. And as we go on and then had progress and then the trains and the modes of transportation became available, they started to have different shows. And there were Black entrepreneurs who founded theaters and facilitated these shows. And given the nature of Jim Crow, they had to find alternate housing, places to eat, places to shop, get their hair done, the church, everything. They had to have networks around the country, and these networks have existed forever. And this is a topic that fascinates me and I think doesn't get enough credit in the narrative, and I like to explore. And so even now, with the internet, we had Black Twitter, and now we have Black Threads, Black Facebook, where Black people have carved out a segment of the social media for our own communication. And so I called where we're located as the Chitlin Circuit Online. And I think that's a wonderful tribute to the people who laid the foundation for us all to be here and to be able to bring this show to you. So that's my comediosophy of the week. And as we go on, I'd like to explore this subject more with people who know more than I do, with some real historians, with people who have studied these phenomena and can give us some more perspective, some more reasons to celebrate what is usually denigrated because it doesn't comport with the larger mainstream point of view. And so now that we have that foundation laid and gotten that out of the way, I am going to introduce our sponsor. Midnight in the Marshaverse is brought to you by Aunt Karen's Suburban Seasonings. And this week, Aunt Karen's Suburban Seasonings presents her new shelf-stable lima bean pizza casserole in a can. Aunt Karen knows that every suburban housewife has kids. No childless cat ladies in the white wing of the greedy, obscene pussy grabbers party. No siree. And everybody knows that just like all kids, suburban kids love pizza. So Aunt Karen proudly presents her newest taste treat for the whole family, shelf-stable lima bean pizza casserole in a can. Just whack the hermetically sealed tube on the counter to open, unroll into a 9x13 oven-safe baking dish, and add included toppings. First, slather a thick, creamy layer of Uncle Clarence's wife's mayo swirl pizza sauce onto the unrolled biscuit dough. Spread the included lima bean puree evenly and bake at 350 until it's almost done. Then sprinkle pickles, pineapples, and pumpkin spice powder over the top and bake an additional 5 minutes or until bubbly and the hungry kids come a-running. No one can resist Aunt Karen's all pea-flavored pizzas. So give yourself a rest from constantly scowling at Black people's TikTok posts as you scour over the internet for nearby hordes of immigrant transgender pet eaters and perverts in your Ring neighborhood app. And let hubby and the kids make this delicious dinner for themselves. You deserve a break today. So don't let hubby or the kids know you spent their McDonald's money on your way home from your weekly Moms for Liberty strategy meeting and coffee clutch with the girls. And remember, just like your girlfriend, hubby, and family, Aunt Karen loves the way you hate. This man from my hometown. Very funny man, and he has a club in Chicago called Riddles that I had the pleasure of working and visiting Chicago a little while ago. And recently, I got to work his show at the at Martha's Vineyard. It was a very fun week, interesting week. I got to see George Clinton. Hey. Hey, lady, won't you be my dog and I'll be your tree and you can pee on me. A lot of people don't know that song, but I'm a George Clinton head. Anyway, I got to see him and I got to work with Joe Claire and B. Cole and my other Chicago, Dion Cole. He was there too. And so this was the first time I did it. He's been doing it for a while. He's going to tell you about it. But it was the first time I did it. It was a wonderful show, a wonderful environment. It's an undertaking that I was very, very happy and proud to be part of. And I'm going to let him tell you all about that when he comes out. Won't you please say hello to my friend, Damon Williams. Hi, Damon.
You've been killing me the whole time.
What did I do?
Because I was so caught up in the narrative of the chitlin circuit. So when you got to the sponsorship, I'm like, okay, I'm glad she got a sponsor. And it was the lima bean piece of casserole.
Well, you know, lima beans the only thing I hate in the world.
Oh, my God.
You know, and since white people ain't lima beans, I can make a distinction between the ones I hate and the ones that are cool. So lima bean is my code word for the Karens of the world.
Yes.
But all the groundwork aside, we know you from Chicago. I've known you. I met you years ago. We worked together just recently. But what I want to ask you before we get into any of that is, because I don't know how old you are.
All right.
But do you know who the Electric Crazy People are?
100%.
You know them? Did you ever?
I know who they are. I'm very familiar with that from Herb Kent's late night or Herb Kent. Herb Kent's a legendary Hall of Fame radio personality from Chicago, and he had these skits. It was theater on the radio, and he had the Wahoo Man, who was the scary person in Electric Crazy People.
Wahoo, wahoo, wahoo!
Yeah,
the little green man up in the trees.
Yes,
and the cast: Orlando Reyes, Carolyn LeBlanc, Emmanuel Arrington, and I can't think of who else was there. But those guys they really taught me, especially Orlando. Taught me so much about comedy, and I was very fortunate to come into comedy at the time that he was still working. He was a Chicago legend, and I just owe him so much. But were you in school when this was happening? Because this was before Saturday Night Live and all that kind of stuff, and before they really had teams on the radio. You know, there'd be one DJ per 2 hours, but he brought in a whole crew. Where were you? Were you in school?
I was a kid. I mean, I'm 59, so I'll be 60 in January. But I just, you know, I'm very aware of things historically around Chicago when it comes to things like radio and just the history of our entertainment. And I had a chance to meet Orlando, of course. Very early on when I was doing stand-up. So that just sparked the memory. Because when you first said, I said, wait a minute, am I thinking Electric Company?
No.
But then when you said Electric Crazy, I'm like, yes, that's Herb Kent, man. I love that.
Her name is Rudolph.
Yeah.
Downtown building owning, diamond on my fingers, where? Anyway, how'd you get started?
The typical situation with the open mic. I overheard, so I used to own a Subway sandwich shop. All right.
So you've always had that entrepreneurial kind of mindset.
Yeah, it translated from the street entrepreneur.
Oh, okay. So
by the time I was 25,
Joe establishment.
Most certainly, you may have been a client had we known each other.
Yeah.
And so funny, you said when you hit the vape top and watched me deteriorate, that was hilarious. But I had a Subway and I had it for like 2 years and it wasn't really prospering. But one thing that came from it, I overheard some guys talking about this open mic and they were saying it's every Wednesday, you know, it's a comedy club. And I hadn't even known that there was a black comedy club, but I always enjoyed the art form. I've always been a student of the game. I've always watched the Tonight Show for any monologue or any comedians on there, white or black. You know, blacks were seldom. And so I wanted to do stand-up, and I was funny around the office or whatever because I had a job before I got my Subway. I'm 25 when I quit, opened my Subway at 25, had it for 2 years. But I overheard these people saying, yeah, it's open mic, man, and old girl is hosting, you know, the one with the big lips, blah, blah, blah. And it turned out that was Adele Givens.
She's gonna love that.
Yeah, well, she had done a joke about her lips being so big, and this guy with little feet. If she gave him some head, it'd be like giving a whale a Tic Tac. And that was her signature joke. So I knew exactly who they were talking about. So I perked up for that, but I didn't want to go right to the big time, you know, black comedy club. So I went to this little hole in the wall place name called the Close Up Piano Bar. And I decided to try it there before I would even attempt to go to All Jokes, you know, and fate would have it that, while I was in there, after I came off stage, another comedian went up, he closed the show, he killed it. He was the house MC at All Jokes. He is George Wilborn. George Wilborn is my first cousin I had never met before.
Okay.
So the first night I ever did stand up is the day I met my first cousin, who my father told me he had a nephew that did comedy. And George and I weren't raised by our father, so that's why we didn't know each other. So I went, George, I said, hey man, it's my first time, but I'm gonna try this thing. So when I learn, you know, how to do it, I'm gonna come and find you, blah, blah, blah. And I walked up. He said, man, where you going? He said, you can't walk up and tell me you my cousin and you doing comedy and just walk off like that. So he said, forget that. I'm taking you to All Jokes tomorrow. I'm going to get you on the list because you had to get through a gauntlet to get to that list between signing up and drawing numbers. And then James Hanna was like the guardian of the gate, and may he rest in peace, Chicago comedian. And he was real hard on New Jacks. You know, he wanted to put you through it. You had to be tested by fire. And so, but George got me on the list, got me up, had a good set. Worked out, and I never stopped. I eventually became Adele's successor when she went on to do bigger things. I ended up hosting that night at All Jokes Aside, and the rest is history, as they say.
And you just made my point that All Jokes Aside was a black club, because this happened after I left Chicago. So this is a black club. This is a process that black comedians could start from the bottom and work their way up to big time.
Yeah.
It was an alternative. It wasn't the mainstream Northside clubs. It was a whole different thing. You had to, if you wanted to, could adapt to both and expose yourself to both. But you could make a living, find a career in the hood, in your neighborhood, speaking your language to your people without having to code switch, change nothing, ask permission, nothing that existed and served to do its job. It has launched people into the crossover, not so much mainstream, but the crossover thing. So it still exists.
Yes.
That Chitlin circuit, which has the bad name like Blaxploitation, when it's just independent filmmaking, basically.
It is. And so, yeah, I mean, to be honest, to be authentically, comedy is segregated culturally anyway, and it's not a matter of bias or racial. It's about relatability, because we had Zanies, we had Catch a Rising Star, we had the Funny Firm, all of these clubs, and I'd go to them, and you know, they give you the 10 free tickets for your birthday, and you know, you go in to be some corny white dude in there, and I was sitting there, I'm like, this dude is not funny, you know, but it was a night out, you know, it was a new experience, because it's late 80s when they were doing that, early 90s, because I started in 92. So the only experience, all jokes, was the first time I'd ever seen that type of thing. And we want to thank, you know, Russell Simmons, Martin Lawrence, and Kid Capri for Def Jam opening up an explosion of the black comedy circuit. You know, prior to that, you had to be a certain type that they would only accept in those clubs. And you had to adapt and adjust, as you well know, to fit the mold of what they would allow, unless you were just super phenomenal or already came with some type of following. You know, they were the Michael Winslow, and, you know, people like Sinbad was one of the first early people to crack that circuit, as far as my knowledge of it. And so, you know, when All Jokes came, it was just a refreshing change. But All Jokes was not ghetto. It was an upscale, high class professional, because all of the owners were MBAs. You know, they were all from a different world of finance and things of that nature. They just wanted to do comedy, and they did it at such a high level that it'll never be duplicated, I don't think.
Well, I had my start after I started on the North Side. I found a club on 95th and Loomis called Roy Show Lounge. And Roy wanted to do a upscale big band jazz club, and he did. And I walked in and told them I had been doing comedy 2 months. I told them I was a comedian and I wanted to be their opening act and their hostess and whatever. And they said, okay. They said, I will pay you $100 a week, two shows a night, five nights a week. And so I started there, and it was like, if you know, at the time, 95th and Loomis was still a nice neighborhood, but it was still a neighborhood that had changed and had been changed for a few years. Yep. So that there was a very strong black urban feel to the club. And he had a 16-piece band, and he would attract local Chicago stars, Donny Hathaway and Ramsey Lewis. They would not work the club. They just come and watch. Like when L.A., when they had the comedy union, you might see, I've seen Bernie Casey and a bunch of other people just in the audience because it was nice to come out to that environment. And so it just strikes me how we don't tie those ends together to let people see the big picture, that there has been a huge black self-made, self-actualized system that has really contributed rock and roll, blues, jazz, hip-hop, R&B, and a million other innovations that if you tie it all together, you don't have the misperception of people that we currently do. But I'm off on my tangent.
But that's fine, because that we have so many interconnected paths, because I my mother still lives on 97th, two blocks over from Loomis.
Okay.
My mother is on 90, and my mother was an operator that worked with your mother at Illinois Bell.
Well, right. She worked with me too, because I worked there for 3 years, like 70 to 73, something like that.
Yeah, she did that for like 30 years or so before retiring. So Roy's, though, was literally a neighborhood staple. And by the time, you know, in the 80s, I was still too young to get in there, but I finally maybe got in Roy's one time with a fake ID before, you know, it declined and eventually went out of business. So when you say Roy's, that just sparked a whole different type of memory. So these stories, people, you have to understand, there's a backstory. Before a person gets to Night Court, you got to work at Roy's, you know? And I just want to say it's an honor and a pleasure and a privilege to be having this conversation with you. For you to start your segment out saying, my friend, it meant the world to me, because you are one of the legends of this game. You deserve all the flowers and all the accolades and all the gigs going forward, you know, because as you see, we've been like sending legends home lately, and we want to, you know, keep you around and keep you laughing.
I ain't got time to fuck around. I got you got a job for me. You got to give it to me today. You know, that's just the reality.
You got plenty of time, and we're going to speak into existence.
I'm so honored that you're here, and I could talk to you forever about this because these are subjects I'm passionate about. And because, again, there's this history that hasn't been really recorded. It hasn't been spoken of. It hasn't gotten any, even it hasn't gotten chitlin' circuit recognition, let alone the mainstream recognition it deserves. And we deserve to know you and the things you're doing and the scope of them, and you deserve space and time to tell me all of that. We've been talking long enough to where we didn't cut you off from telling your whole story. But how did you decide to marry the creative and the commercial?
I never wanted to work, you know? I'm gonna be honest with you. I had in fourth grade. I to this day, I remember sitting in the classroom, looking at these people going through this in the Matrix. And I said, when I get grown, when I grow up, I'm gonna ride limousines and I'm gonna be my own boss. And I don't know where this came from, but I just knew that there had to be something different than a 40-hour work week and a mundane existence. And I've taught that to my son as well. And so, you know, it just came together. I had an older brother that was a hustler, though. I mean, and I'm talking breaking leaves, shoveling snow, carrying groceries. Then he went to selling weed and, you know, and all these things. But he had a work ethic. He sold paper newspaper subscriptions. You know, he always put that hustle in. So that came from him.
He delivers at once. I'm going to deliver your paper and your paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Get you some news and some joy.
Okay. But the page to read it. Go ahead. Yeah. We'll play around here all night. Go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where that side came from. And then the creative, you know, I don't know really where it's spawned. I was a middle child. I was always quiet at home, you know. But then in school, you know, I started to notice that if you got a little few chuckles, you know, the girls would look, you know, you might not have necessarily have on the best clothing, but, you know, if you made people laugh, you got a little more shine. And so I took it from there. Then when Eddie Murphy did Delirious, which was the first VHS or first time I ever seen a VCR, was at my cousin's place. And he was a big baller and he had a VCR and he put in Eddie Murphy Delirious. And we set up, I remember I was drinking St. Pauli girl beer, smoked a little weed, and even took a bump. And I don't do that, but we did it then. And that was the first time I ever experienced that. And I was like, this what that do? So look, I'm going to be real honest. So I went half with a guy on a quarter bag of powder. And ladies and gentlemen, this is early. This is pre-fentanyl. This was just a crispy, clear, crisp. Cocaine used to be a beautiful thing.
No caffeine.
Right. Until some genius decided to cook it. So took a little bump and I was like, that's all this does. I said, give me $10. You can have my half back. And I never really indulged in that. But we sat there and we watched Eddie Murphy's Delirious and it just sparked something in me. Now, like I said, I'd always watched, you know, you see Nipsey Russell, you see, Dangerfield, I would watch Rickles, all of the cast, whoever would be on Tonight Show, just people laughing. So comedy was with me. Then, of course, you know, the typical, listen to the Richard Pryor, you know, is it something I said and that nigga's crazy. Those two albums were a staple at my household. And then I saw Richard on Saturday Night Live. So all these things combined brought me to this. And then, so Eddie made it, you know, palatable because you always heard comedy, but when I saw it and saw him do the rock star status, and then Def Jam came and gave us the opportunity, all that came together. But I knew that I didn't want to just be an employee in the comedy game as well. So the first time I did All Jokes Aside, I was filling in for a feature. And for people who don't know, comedy shows, the format is the host feature is an up-and-coming comic that opens for the headline. So I come in, I'm really still a new jack, and the feature had some type of car incident where he couldn't make it. And Raymond Lambert from All Jokes Aside said, man, the feature's not here. you can go up and say, if you do well tonight, I'll let you finish out the weekend. You know, he gave me the old speech, I'll let you finish up, kid. No, he needed me. But that's the mentality, of, you know, that they use. So I went up, I did my thing. He said, okay, you can finish the week. So I go out and I'm buying tickets for everybody. I mean, I bought maybe $600 worth of tickets back then, you know, because I was balling. And I never asked what I was getting paid. So at the end of the week, I had done 5 shows. He wrote me a check. Back then, the ticket was only like $12.50. But I had bought, I'm telling you, I probably bought 20, 30 tickets that weekend. Because all jokes would sell out, and I want everybody to see me. All jokes had a line around the corner. People were at first. The Bulls would be there. The Bears would be there. End of the week, he write me a check, and he handed it to me. It's $125 for 5 shows. And when I saw that check, I said, man, what's up? He said, man, I did you a favor. He said, the exposure you got this weekend was invaluable, and in L.A., they don't pay you nothing. So I, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, now I know I need to be you. I need to be, because I can count, you know. I saw all these people in here. You got 250 people in here paid $12 5 times when I was here. Mm-hmm. So that's what made me, I branched out and I started hosting my own room. And I give comedians this advice all the time, young comics. Find a spot. I don't care if it's a hole in the wall, if it only can hold 3 people, and host your own room. So you can A, work on your material, B, learn the business, and C, you have a recurrent audience, which forces you to do new material. Those 3 things will make you strong. And that's how we go from that, fast forward all the way to the Martha's Vineyard, all the way to me, you know, curating riddles occasionally now and everything.
Yeah, okay. Like, we out of time, but I could talk to you forever.
Of course.
I do have, because this is important again. This is important, and it's important that people hear it like this, not in this so much a scholarly academic kind of way where it's condensed down to its essence of logic and silliness, where they, you know, these are relatable people talking about relatable things. This ain't no star tripping, this ain't nothing, this is the real nitty gritty. And it's also, like I said, that wonderful history that I'm afraid we lost so much of. We lost so much of jazz musicians creating jazz in body houses. Who were these people? What did they, where did they come from? And they created to everybody, because nobody had a place to stay. Nobody could stay in the upscale. So the preacher was down there with the pimp. And what kinds of actions, activities, plans, schemes, you know, dreams, what that motivation. Wonderful magic that we miss. And not being able to express, to tell the kids. So we have to fill in these blanks any way we can. We have to, knowing what we know, we have to imagine what they had to do. And then kind of tie that continuum to, like I said, where we are now, where we're still doing those things. And before I let you go, we have to talk about how people say, well, we don't help each other. And that is so far from my experience. That is so far from what I had known. Everybody I know got a posse. Bringing, like you said, you bought 600 tickets. Everybody I know is bringing people with them and always have. And we allow this narrative to be told so other people can believe it, that we don't stick together. We don't. There has always been an alternative system where Black people did just that.
That's the only way. That's the only way it survives. One guy finds a spot in Toledo, and he's like, "Man, I did this room, and I gave him your name, and you know that's how that works." And then you, like you say, you get a guy that starts to get the little notoriety, and he's got 2 opening acts with him, and so on and so on. And then that's been my legacy. When I got Comic View, which you know was the launching pad for a lot of careers back then. Once I got the connection, I came home and I did a mass audition and instead post everybody, because you had to send in your VHS and your headshot and they would review tapes and they pick people. I said, why are we sending all these tapes in? Let's film one show and send them the tape with everybody on it and they pick who they like. And they pick, you know, 15, 20 people from those tapes. So that type of thing is what we need to do. And that's what this next generation should do for each other as well.
That's how I got the prior show. Paul Booth cast everybody from the Comedy Store. He said, we don't need... we get people there, they know how to do it, and he cast all of us. Is how we got our union cards.
Awesome.
This is not an anomaly, this is a tradition. Before I let you go, my 2 comedy sons would choke me when we leave if I didn't ask you if you would let them ask you a couple of questions.
Without doubt.
All right. I want to introduce my sons, my comedy sons, who I love dearly. And we just got together over the weekend to see the First Ladies of Disco. Martha Wash has this wonderful show, First Ladies of Disco, and it's a fountain of youth. Once they start singing the songs that they created a genre with, it's just magic to watch people. And they got a chance to experience Stephen for the 52th time. Anyway, and so they're here tonight like they are every week, and I'm happy to have them. First, I'll introduce my oldest son, the one who looks just like me. He's a very funny young man, and I love him to death. Stephen Roberts. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Damon. How are you?
Hey, Stephen. I see the resemblance.
Yeah, well, we look a lot more like each other with our glasses off.
Yeah, right. He looks like his dad. and my baby boy, my problem child, my Chicago born and raised.
Yeah.
Just sweetheart of a man. And my baby say hello to Skills Hudson.
Yeah.
Y'all know
him? Salvo.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You work with Damon?
Skills. Oh, yes. Man. Yes. Yes.
Last time?
Yes. Yeah. And can I say this? I don't have a question. What I wanted to say is, I don't think I even told Damon this before. First of all, I want to give him his flowers because, first of all, he when I first met Damon over 20 years ago, you know what I'm saying? It was at Circus. I was doing door-to-door sales, and they had a convention there, and he was the comedian, you know what I'm saying? And this chick that I was dating, you know what I'm saying, her girlfriend had on this bogus outfit, and it was the first time I ever heard somebody say Ghetto Power Ranger. That was you. You called her that. And then fast forward, like 6 years later, I started stand-up. Then a few years later, I met you at Anthony Brown Club. And yes. At the time, Rodney Perry was giving me so much help. The late, great James Hanna, D. Militant, and you know what I'm saying? And you had seen me at Anthony Brown Club. I was hosting at the time, and you gave me advice and everything. And fast forward years now, you know what I'm saying? You don't let me headline your club. When I first time I came out there, you gave me the credit because people was bringing me up in Chicago like I was from L.A. Like, this next comic is from L.A.? Nah, I'm from the crib. You know what I'm saying? Right. And you was the first one to give me that stamp, you know what I'm saying, at the crib. Right. And thank you, fam.
Man, when I saw you at the Anthony Brown spot, I said, I got to get you to the crib because, man, you cracked me up. You already know, though, man. Yeah.
Yeah, well, very funny, man. And we met, we got together about almost 8-9 years ago. And so I'm proud that how we've all grown from there.
Indeed.
But Stephen.
Yes, yeah. Ma'am.
Do you know Damon?
Damon and I have never met.
Right.
So did you heard these conversations? You have any questions?
Yeah, I'd like to know from Damon, what has changed and what has not changed in Chicago comedy? I actually used to live in Chicago many years back. I wasn't a comedian at the time, but what's changed in Chicago as far as comedy and what has not changed in Chicago as far as that's concerned?
Well, what has changed in comedy in Chicago is the integration between North Side and South Side. And I think Mary Lindsay, who was one of the founders of All Jokes Aside and Jokes and Notes, kind of bridged the gap by having showcases for comedians both at her place, but also bringing North Side comics to the South Side and then introducing South Side comedians to the North Side. So the Laugh Factory, Zany's, Comedy Bar, all these places now, you know, we roam freely. What hasn't changed is all of those places are still there, and there are not many Black-owned comedy establishments. So, but the comedy in itself it's still, it's a breeding ground. Here's the thing. They say you go to New York or LA to make it, but you learn in Chicago.
Yeah.
You can nurture your game. I mean, if you look at the pipeline of Saturday Night Live from Second City, Chicago is a comedy town where you cut your teeth and you get your chops, and then you go to those opportunistic zones, allegedly, to you know, get the agent and make it to the big time.
You know, they said that even in the Chitlin Circuit, Chicago was the mecca of the tour. All the tours began and ended in Chicago because of the locality of the trains and planes and the airports and stuff. You could go in either direction from Chicago. So everything started there and ended there. And so that tradition brought everybody to Chicago. Chicago got everybody, every group. Motown being next door, they used to release all of the Motown songs in Chicago months before they got national release to test them. They tested everything out in Chicago. And so it's a great place to learn. I had to leave. I left after 2 years because I knew I was not an improv comedian. And at that time, comedy clubs were brand new and everything had moved back to Los Angeles. And Chicago was doubling down on its improv tradition, and it was huge. So since I never saw myself that way, I'm going where the stand-ups are. And I always wanted to go to L.A. anyway. 77 Sunset Strip was a show when I was a little girl, 77. And I dreamed of riding down the highway in Los Angeles. So,
and it worked out. And it worked out.
And it worked out. It worked out for all of us. Damon, come back again anytime. I would love to talk to you more. I know there are things in your brain we have only hinted at.
Yeah.
We would all be better off to hear. I thank you so much, and I wish you so much more success, because, again, my success is tied to your success. And so I want you to do well as fuck. And I want you to bring, you know, my sons along, because we have a lot to share and offer each other. And
we shall.
Anytime, and you're welcome anytime.
Well, thanks for having me. Good to meet you, Stephen. Skills, you know what it is. And to everybody watching this, let's show some love to Mother Diva herself.
Thank you.
Y'all didn't ask me what I was drinking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Since it's 2 a.m. here, I already had my libations earlier, but I just happened to have been drinking an Ensure shake, and I know that would have been funny as hell.
That's all right. It still is.
Cheers.
Thank you so much. I wouldn't, if I had known that, I wouldn't have had to ask you how old you were.
You can tell his age by those curtains, those coffin color curtains in the back.
Now,
those are blackout curtains, so I don't need to know when the sun come up. You know, comedians are vampires.
Don't let daylight catch me up again.
Much all love, right. Y'all.
Good night, honey.
All right, Bebo.
Holla.
So, what'd you think?
You know the coolest people. You really do. You just know the coolest people.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, but I'm so fascinated by that history. I'm so not just fascinated by it because I know a lot of it, but I'm just so excited about how much there is to share and how much fun it is. It's like there's this whole treasure chest of information just buried right in plain sight that ain't nobody opened up. Look at all that sparkly shit. And I'm just finding it invigorating to even consider it and to speak to Damon and have that connection, that hometown connection. That and it's not just the hometown, it's the shorthand, knowing he understands what I'm saying. I understand what he's saying in those shared moments. It's just that I've had a really fun time with that segment, with that
And can I say this, listening to y'all, and when he was saying about his coming up and when he would go to the club and how James Hanna, right, the one I mentioned too, and for me to hear how he was then, and I remember when I was a new comedian, how he used to treat all the newer comics and took, like, when he seen I was funny, then he would, but at first he was like, man, what are you here for? He's like, oh, no, we only let funny people on stage here. You know what I'm saying? You know, and to hear him saying that and, you know, and telling his story about that and that connection, and y'all talking about 98th and Loomis, and I remember running from over there when I was a shorty. I was dating this girl, and I was in the wrong area. I was GD at the time, and I was running from the Stones from over there. So just hearing those stories and the connections.
Well, there's another little nugget, spicy nugget, to drop into the gumbo of this conversation.
I know I had an amazing time, and my girl Christy, she had amazing time. She said at the thing, and she was laughing how you had called out on the she said that when you asked her about what type of music she liked to listen to,
she's like I a little bit of like, she hadn't really paid no attention to disco because it was, you know, so far before her. She's like, is it what? And as soon as they said bang, she's like, hey. He didn't sit down for the whole concert.
The whole time. She had videos and pictures of everything. She sent me, I'm in the moment too. She got me out. I'm like, oh, okay.
So you were a baby when, or were you born when the disco era was?
No, it was before, but my father, God rest his soul, he was a DJ. So he played like, until up to he passed, he played and wore his clothes from everything evolved, but he still stayed. I'm like, how do you still got new outfits? They're not making those clothes no more.
Yes, they are still. They still selling them lime green.
And he would come up with one.
Yes, they are still selling. I can tell you where to go. Them lime green walking suits with the lime green underwear and the lime green socks and the lime green hat and the lime green, get your lime green car. But now you gotta have a white coat. Drink, so you can't have a lime green coat. It's got to match the band in your hat. Oh, there are rules. There are rules.
Know what else I got to experience this weekend, Ma, was menopause.
Oh, so there was a hot flash in your bed.
Yeah, but like, to hear from y'all is different than like, and I used to hear from my aunties and stuff when I was, but I never experienced it with an individual as in my lady, and she, and just a different, the things, like she had the fan and did put the blanket over, did want to take off clothes and like turn and the air on. And got a taste for this. And
don't touch me. Don't say.
Don't touch me. Why am I crying? Don't ask me why I'm crying. Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Just leave me alone. Where you going?
I was like, oh, okay.
Where you going? Don't go nowhere.
Yes, I could have sworn she was asleep. I was stepping. Where you going?
Oh. No, Angie says oranges help her. Got to eat oranges. I've never had a hot flash. I'm one of those. When you started, Steven, in comedy.
Yes.
Was there a gay circuit?
No, there is not really a gay circuit, so to speak. One of our strengths and one of our weaknesses as a community of LGBTQ people is that we come from all different kinds of families and houses. And most of us come from straight families and straight houses, so to speak. And so we do not have, our strength is that we are literally everywhere. We come from every background, every nation, every skin color, every religion. We come from everything. On the other hand, that means that we're very dispersed. So we really don't come together until we're adults, until the very recent past, that's been the case. And so our forums have always been bars. That's been our main place. There was a thing in the 1800s called Molly houses. Molly houses were places where mostly gay men met. And in most of these cases, a cross-dressing and drag was always the milieu or the performance that people engaged in there. So, you know, and of course you had to be very clandestine and
discreet.
And but discreet.
At the same time, there was in minstrelsy, for one thing, all the performances in the beginning were by men. It was a male art form. And then grew out of that a very strong gay drag tradition. There were some very famous drag performers.
Sure. And you can go all the way back to Commedia del, you can go all the way back to Commedia dell'arte, and there was always this one character with the lotsy or the shtick, as you will, who was the effeminate, the clown, who was a Nelly boy.
And the movies had the Gunkel and
always,
the handsome woman.
Always.
There were always these covered, subtle, not so subtle hints to our existence. But
and the circuit that you speak of is mostly drag. There are, there were and have been comedians and musicians and things of that nature, but mostly our foundation has been drag.
But the 60s had the baths, the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, and that was, of course, another place, but it was very much like the bars. It was just another, we didn't have a circuit the same way.
Right.
Although you would see traveling drag queens. I mean, and that's another good point is that drag queens also, the pageants became a very big thing in the 60s. And Black people were not invited to a lot of those types of things, especially balls. The balls that they started having in the 1930s, 1920s, 1930s, Black people were not really invited to those. And so they came up with their own. And then, of course, the very famous balls that happened in the 70s and 80s. And that was almost exclusively people of color.
Yeah, well, we always had the Jewel Box Review. It was a drag show that toured the Chitlin' Circuit and came to town once every 6 months or so. But I asked you earlier, we have a tradition of two-minute rants. But I'm on a good vibration kind of kick. So
me too.
What are you giggling about?
Me too. Because all I heard was balls, 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 balls.
Okay, I can probably understand
why you hear
that, but I am very piqued by the fact that you say that.
No, because that's what I got from Steven's soliloquy, Ma.
I see where you're coming from. I'm worried about you, but I see where you're coming from.
I would just like to remind the whole world, especially our viewers, that when you go to a restaurant, please remember that the hosts of the restaurant, they do not require them to have a full amount of brain cells in their head. You do not have to be a high school graduate to host at a restaurant. Because we know this countless times. I've been a server and I've been a patron at restaurants, and I never cease to want to kill the host of a restaurant, especially a corporate restaurant. It's like we walk into a restaurant. There's three of us. We're all guys. And they walk us in. There are, let's say there are 70 tables in this restaurant. Obviously, there's one section because there's only one waitress or server at this time. And they have maybe, let's say, three tables that are going. And they have, the host has set them all on top of each other. We got the whole restaurant. You don't want to just go one and then an open table and then one and an open table so people can have their private conversations, do what they want. No, you're going to put them all together because that's what the map says and that's what you were told to do. And so that's, you cannot have your own common sense as a host. We walk in, the host wants to put three dudes in between a family with two crying children and a deaf man who keeps asking his wife, what did they say? What did they say? Huh? What? How much is it? Like that. You're like, you don't want to just, no, they want to put us right in the middle. You don't want to just put us over there. It's very, that's still obviously in the section. I'm a waiter. I've been a waiter many times. I know that this is totally possible. So I just looked at him and said, can we sit somewhere besides next to the babies? And he looked at me like I was a genius. You know, I was like, oh yeah. Like, that's a great idea. I said, there's only three other tables in this place. What? You can't sit us over there? Oh. Okay.
Well, thank you. Your sunny disposition belies a darker side because
does it? You think
this is the fourth or fifth time you said you want to kill people in social situations, and so I worry for the people you interact with when there's a money exchange of some sort.
Well, we've proven white people are pretty dangerous.
Well, so. Okay, but it's all right. I don't want you to get hurt, and Lord, don't hurt nobody.
I appreciate you. I will keep my hands to myself.
That's okay. But you can express your frustration in that manner. We understand now that you mean no harm.
Yes. And thank you for
letting the people were harmed in the production of this.
Yeah, you really can't say I'm going to kill people anymore, can you? You really can't.
I don't think it would. You know, it's what it might turn up later that we worry about.
On Instagram, they kind of cancel you. they don't let you say that. I didn't mean kill. I meant strangle. How about that? Does that work?
Okay. That better for me.
I'm gonna be moving soon, right? I'm gonna be moving it to rent a room somewhere else. But look, this lady, this older white lady, right? She was saying that she had a room to rent, but she wanted to go out with me just to, you know what I'm saying, to have a, you know, just a dinner and you know, talk and stuff like that and tell me things about and everything and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, I didn't think nothing of it. We went to, are you still there, Steven?
No, but keep talking. Nobody would have known it.
we went to Olive Garden, right? Mm-hmm. So when we get there, it was basically empty, right? But then where we sitting at, she asked to sit like over to the side. And I'm like, all right, cool. So then when the lady sits these other people, she bring five black ladies and set them right on the opposite, like it was a divider wall, little thing, glass thing, but they were sitting on the opposite side. And when I tell you, all of them, like the lady was sitting with her back to them, but they were looking over the little thing, looking at me, like looking like, I can't believe you. You out with that old woman. Why is you taking advantage of, like, giving me that look? Like I'm, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so to what bro was saying about why they should just sit you and,
well,
it's, you know,
the server don't want to have to walk all over the restaurant when there's only three people in the room. you know, they want to be able to sit this down and turn over here and whatever. They're not really.
And that's understandable. You know, when people do stuff for you and don't have to do it and everything like you always do also. But Steven, about a month ago, he got me this hat in Chicago. And I wore it tonight and I had it up like this purposely. So I wanted to show him that I rocked it tonight, because he when he had called me that night, we was in Chicago, and he told me, I was like, man, give me a hat. Just like that, when I know it's cousins I got that live there, I tell them to send me a hat, and it's still in the mail.
Okay. I ain't been downtown, so I'll get you one next time I go down there. There's so much that I want to do with this show. Something good, something happy, is that at 70, I still have things to look forward to. And I have this opportunity to carve out a place of my own the way I see fit on this Chitlin Circuit of the Chitlin Circuit Online, where I don't have to wrestle with the question of other people's expectations of what a 70-year-old Black woman is supposed to be like, where I can be myself and set my own standards and do things as I see fit. And just to know that I've seen in the segment of progress that I've been fortunate enough to live through, I've seen so many things change and so many things happen that could never happen before. And for us to be able to sit here and have these conversations, and for me to be able to have the means that it takes to dedicate this time to putting this show on, even though we have our technical difficulties. And Steven is having a hard time hanging on this week.
Steven dropping out like on Star Trek.
And he's, you know, his new working the new router out is going to take him some time. But he's here, and we appreciate very much his contributions and perspective. And so on that note, and being able to work with people like Martha Wash, who I think is one of the most dynamic icons ever. Her contributions are unmatched. The things that she's, you know, put forward, and because of her, people get paid that wasn't getting paid before. Like, she wasn't getting paid until she said, no, we can't let this slide. and won. And now you can't put somebody else's face on her work and not pay her and not acknowledge her and not acknowledge anybody else. Everybody has to be paid for their labor. And just being able to tell these stories and relive those moments with some of those names like Emmanuel Arrington and Ronaldo. Ronaldo got shot in the face in front of the club and went to the hospital and came back the same night. Ronaldo. Those are the kinds of things that happen there. He was talking about North and South. We used to have white comics come to the South Side, and we went to the North Side regularly. We went back and forth. And even when we got to the Comedy Store, there was the Chitlin Circuit of the Comedy Store. After midnight, everybody trying to get that last spot that was dedicated to Paul Mooney and wait for those nights when he wouldn't show up and then maybe get a chance to work. There, it's always been that that alternative kind of approach to comedy that led to Fat Tuesdays and Chocolate Sundays and Black clubs and things that gave people a way out of no way. And so this tradition, I think we need to really take a step back and take a bow and show gratitude to the people who came before us and acknowledge the fact that you have a place in that continuum, that you are making a way for other people. And so, Stephen, I'm sorry I can't say goodnight to you because you ain't here. But in your
You know the song that almost embodies everything that you were saying, and then it was played at the Ladies of Disco, the first Ladies of Disco that. And man, you were amazing at that, and the whole show was that was so great to end my weekend. It made the rest of the evening before. But anyway,
all right, you got
points. But the song, everybody,
and that's the beauty of disco. Everybody danced. When they said everybody danced,
everybody danced,
and it didn't matter. It was all kinds of people, gay, straight, black, white, Hispanic. Everybody was there. Then everybody was just enjoying that time.
Yes, it was 8,000 years of life in there.
Got a bad rap, but it was a very important era, and it's just special. To be able that they respect me enough to let me share a stage with them. I just get giggly every time. Where are you going to be, boo?
This weekend, I'm going to have filling in for me on my show, Carlos Anthony here in Vegas. Shout out to him. But I'm going to be with Lunel in Austin, Texas at the Capitol Comedy Club. I'm back here Sunday and Monday with Lunel and Jimmy Kimmel.
And I'm sure people are in for a treat to see you. And we look forward to having you back here next week when we do another show. We got another special guest, and we got stories to tell with that special guest. So I'm grateful that you're here. Damon, thank you so much. For coming out or staying up and sharing your stories. And I know from what he said, I know he's got hours more. We could do an hour.
Yes.
Easy.
Oh, yeah.
We could do a round table. Can you imagine doing a round table with just the guests we've had so far? What we could learn, what we could share? Man, there's a thought. Anyway, Damon, thank you for coming. Stephen, get your router fixed. I know you're going to be all the way 100% next week.
And if everybody enjoyed what they were just watching, make sure you like, share, and comment. The Martian Furs.
Tell your friend, tell your mama. don't feel bad if I hit on her, because if she's cute, you know, I might just have to. Anyway, that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother time. Thank y'all for watching. Come back again. And don't forget to make yourself one of these upper ghettos. They are good. Bye.
Bye.
She got away, no one can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She's back, she's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she